Welcome to our last shir of the week. Thursdays is Parshas HaShavua. Hard to believe it's been a full week in this semi-quarantine state. I'm sure it's been varying degrees of challenging, but challenging for everybody. And at least for me, one of the things that's helped get me through the week is this ability to connect with people in a sense and give this Divrei Torah. And I appreciate all of you being here for all these shiurim. And as long as this lasts, Emir Hashem, I will be here for you, and I hope you will be together to learn Torah. So without further ado, let's share two ideas on the Parsha. We begin this week, again, if not in shul, but then at least learning it ourselves over Shabbos, Sefer and Parshat Vayikra. And I wanted to mention two ideas, both of which I think are meaningful, powerful, any year, but will be hopefully particularly relevant and inspirational this year. Let's start with the first pasuk, the opening pasuk of our parsha, Vayikra el Moshe, Vayedaber Hashem Elav Me'ohel Mo'ed Le'mor. And Hashem called to Moshe, and he spoke to him from the Ohel Mo'ed, and he told him. As many of you may know, there is a tradition that the Sefer Torah, when a real Sefer Torah is written, the opening pasuk of our parsha, the opening word, the namesake of our parsha, Vayikra, the Aleph in Vayikra, Vav Yud Kuf Resh Aleph, the Aleph in Vayikra is written very small. It's a, what's called an Aleph Zeira, a small Aleph. It's as if it doesn't even exist. And when you look at the word, the standard size letters spell out the word Vayikar, meaning encountered, from Lashon of Mikra, encountered or happenstance or chanced upon. Unlike the word Vayikra in its usual sense, which means, of course, to call or to summon a meeting or a request, Vayikar, the big letters, certainly suggest something more accidental, an accidental meeting, a mere happening. So it's peculiar, the whole thing, Bichlal, why all of a sudden, of all the words in the Torah, Vayikra is spelled with a Vayikar in normal size letters, and then that Aleph spelling out the word Vayikra is in a very, very small. So in order to answer this question, what is being hinted at, or what message are we supposed to get by the small Aleph, one word of background, and that is the comment of Rashi. The Rashi right here in the beginning of our Parsha, Rashi quotes the Medrash from Chazal that explains that the word Vayikra, as Hashem speaks to Moshe, again, not just a coincidence here, but the namesake of our Parsha and our entire Sefer, that the word Vayikra, say Chazal, quoted here by Rashi, is a lashon shel chiba. It's a term of endearment or affection. How do we know that? Because that's the term that is used when the angels are speaking with each other as they praise Hashem, as we know from the Kedusha, Vikara ze'el ze'vi amar. The angels call to each other in praise of Hashem. So Rashi says that Vayikra, when Hashem speaks to Moshe with Vayikra, that's a lashon of chiba, of affection. It shows how much affection HaKadosh Baruch Hu had for Moshe. The Rashi continues, based on the Medrash, and contrasts the Vayikra to Moshe, on the other hand, contrasting with Bilam. As great as Bilam was in that he was a prophet, and he was apparently a great prophet from the perspective of prophecy, but nevertheless, when Hashem appears to Bilam, even to speak to him, as the Pasuk tells us in Bamidbar, Perek Kaf Gimel, Pasuk Dalet, Vayikar Elokim El Bilam. Vayikar, just Vav Yud Kuf Resh, no Aleph. Vayikar Elokim El Bilam. That Hashem appeared to Bilam. And Rashi quotes from Chazal that the reason that term is used is because it was Arai. It was happenstance. Bilam didn't know when it was going to happen, and it wasn't something that was ever consistent. At that moment, Hashem decided and chose to appear to and communicate with Bilam. But because that was just happenstance, there wasn't a consistent, committed relationship, that's not the level of affection that Vayikra, that there was an appointed, regular, so to speak, if you will, forgive the expression, it was almost like Hashem and Moshe had date night, if you will. They had a committed, regular, ongoing relationship, Vayikra, Lashon Shel Chiba. As opposed to, Rashi says, Vayikar el Bilam, that was just happenstance, that doesn't show the affection, that didn't really exist between Hashem and Bilam. So that's the Rashi. In light of all that, comes along the Baal HaTurim, the famous Baal HaTurim, the author of the Tur, one of the most influential Sifrei Halacha, the father of the Rosh, But he also has a sefer on Chumash, the Baal HaTurim, and there the commentary Baal HaTurim, based on this Medrash that Rashi quotes, he takes it a step further. Rashi and the Medrash are just contrasting Vayikra and Vayikar. However, the Baal HaTurim alludes to and addresses the question we started with, which is, why, if the word to Moshe is Vayikra, why is the Aleph small? Manavshach. Either you're going to say Vayikra, then spell it all out in regular sized letters. And if you're going to say Vayikar, like with Bilam, so then just say Vayikar without an Aleph. What's this idea that our Parsha begins with? Every Torah is written with, it says Vayikra, we read it Vayikra, but the Aleph is small. So the Baal HaTurim explains, based on this Rashi and this discrepancy, this distinction between Moshe and Bilam, and it says as follows. This is an amazing, amazing Baal HaTurim. Says the Baal HaTurim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Moshe to use the word Vayikra to write it out in a normal way, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to be clear. Hashem wanted to demonstrate his affection for Moshe. He wanted it to be truly Vayikra. He wanted everyone to see how much he loved Moshe. But Moshe, out of his extraordinary humility, he didn't want to write the word Vayikra. He refused. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not doing it. I'm not writing Vayikra. I don't want to stand out. I don't want to show that I'm so much closer to you even than other prophets. And therefore, he just wanted to write Vayikar to be like every other prophet. Why should he be different? But HaKadosh Baruch Hu insisted, no, Moshe, you are different, and I want everyone to understand the special affection I have for you. And therefore, Hashem was insistent that the word be Vayikra. So what happened? Says the Baal HaTurim, that's why we have the small Aleph. Moshe took the final word. Moshe got the last word, if you will, and Moshe compromises. He couldn't totally disregard HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He couldn't write Vayikar. On the other hand, his humility wouldn't allow him to spell it out fully, and therefore Moshe, as a compromise, writes out the word Vayikar in normal size letters, and the Aleph, and Aleph Zeira, the Aleph as if it would be barely noticeable. Moshe not wanting, out of his humility, not wanting to bring any special attention to his relationship, to his special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the Baal HaTurim, a very beautiful insight, and if this is the correct pshat, it's one of many, many examples we have, both Benigla Ubenistar, of Moshe's incredible humility. Ad kan the Baal HaTurim. However, in light of the current situation that we all find ourselves, I wanted to share a second interpretation of the small Aleph, one which I don't remember exactly where I heard it from, so we'll say it in the name of the legendary Balei Drush. Balei Musar, Balei Drush, somebody. This is not my Chiddush, I don't want to take credit for it, but I'm not positive I can quote who said it, so I can't exactly bring the Geula. At least I can go halfway, and I won't take false credit for it. But I want to share a different interpretation. Because until now, we've been suggesting that the small Aleph is written that way to show a virtue of Moshe. We can suggest instead, however, that this wasn't necessarily just showing a virtue of Moshe, but rather the small Aleph is intended to convey the struggle of Moshe. The contrast between the two terms that Rashi used, that Vayikra is a lashon of chiba, of affection, and Vayikar is a term of arai, of happenstance, of not having an intimate or emotional relationship. The contrast between chiba and arai is because the greatest sweetness in life is the feeling of not being alone. Not being alone from family, and ultimately not being alone from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from Hashem. Bilam, ultimately, existentially, Bilam was alone in the sense that he never knew when Hashem would appear to him. And therefore, he was fundamentally always alone, just every now and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu would pop in. Moshe, on the other hand, Moshe had a different experience. Moshe wanted, even though he had Hashem regularly appearing to him, here's the key point though, despite the fact that he was objectively was different than Bilam, but Moshe didn't always feel different than Bilam. Moshe often felt Vayikar, and therefore that's why he wanted to write it, because sometimes he felt alone. What does that mean? Well, it's true. On the one hand, yes, Moshe lived a life of privilege. He grew up in the castle of Paro, but he was torn from his parents. Yes, it's true that he got the zechus of taking Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim, but 4/5 of his people, 80% of his people passed away. Again, I don't even want to, al tiftach pe, I don't even want to mention the numbers that they're talking about in the worst case scenario with corona. And they're horrible numbers. But they're nothing close, bli ayin hara, nothing close to 80% of the population. Can you imagine how overwhelmingly guilty and emotional any leader, let alone a leader of Moshe's caliber, of Moshe's empathy, of Moshe's sensitivity, to take out a people and to lose 80%, four-fifths of your people in the process? Yes, it's true that Moshe has this chus of leading the Jewish people for 40 years in the desert. But Moshe didn't get to go into Eretz Yisrael. He didn't get in the end zone. He didn't get to the finish line with his people. Moshe's life was not a straight line of success or of simcha. He didn't always feel or always see the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He didn't always feel that much different than Bilam. And therefore, Moshe's life is in part marked by struggle to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the truth of the matter is that even though, of course, Moshe and us by extension, intellectually, we know that Moshe is always there, but it's one thing to know something intellectually, it's a whole other thing to feel it emotionally. That's the difference between Vayikra and Vayikar. And what a difference an Aleph can make. Moshe wrote the small Aleph because even though it's true intellectually, he knew that Vayikra, Hashem was always with him. But a lot of times it felt like Vayikar. He felt alone. He couldn't see the Aleph even when he knew it was really there. I had the schus earlier this week to share this idea at a funeral that I officiated at here in Beit Shemesh. It was a tragic death under any circumstances, and the tragedy was certainly exacerbated by the fact that all of the American relatives of the Niftar had to stay back in America. The mace came to Eretz Yisrael by itself, and the only Ovel living in Israel, the brother of the Niftar who lives in my community, was the only Ovel at the funeral. Imagine just how horrible, incredibly small number of people there, everyone standing far away from each other. And I mentioned this very point and how a family going through that tragedy, a family, a wonderful family with a wonderful person who passed away, who truly believes in Vayikra, truly understands and believes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was always with them. And yet they were going through an experience of Vayikar, of not feeling HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of feeling Hashem in and out of their life, of alienation, of feeling alone, of feeling awry. But the truth is, even though that's obviously an extreme and tragic situation, the truth is on some level, lahavdil and Baruch Hashem for most of us, we're not going through anything that tragic, but still all of us on some level in the current matzav, I think, are going through this exact issue and struggling with this exact tension between Vayikar and Vayikra. Intellectually, we all know that Vayikra is true, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us every time, including now. But often, especially during this past week, I'm sure I'm not the only one who has had moments like this, it feels more like Vayikar. We, you know, Hashem's kind of peering in and out, coming in and out. We're not always feeling the love, to put it in a modern vernacular. We're all, each of us, in our own way, going through ups and downs. When we may have moments of inspiration, davening in a week like this, even alone, can, I think for many of us, we've had moments where maybe our davening was even better than it would be typically in shul. On the other hand, in the big picture, we're feeling the pain. We're feeling the pain if, Rahman al-Islam, we or someone we love are sick. We're all feeling the pain in our pocketbooks. We're feeling the pain of being alone, stranded, away from people, friends, let alone family. And we don't always feel it, even though we know it's there. But that's exactly in these moments when we have to look for the Aleph Zeira. We have to look for that little Aleph and remind ourselves, even in our own lives, even when we feel that it's only a Vayikar, that really, it is a Vayikra. And that is one of the main, I would say, avodos of this past week, and so it appears the coming week. Hopefully a miracle will happen sooner than later, of struggling, despite all the challenges that we're dealing with, to realize not only intellectually, but emotionally, feel that Vayikra, that Hashem is truly with us in a Lashon Shel Chiba. Okay, that's the first idea I'd like to share. And then for a few more minutes, if you'll allow me, I would like to share a second idea as well, and this actually comes from the second pasuk in the parsha, right away. The pasuk says right afterwards, "Daber el bnei Yisrael v'yamarta lehem adam ki yakriv mikem karban laHashem." Moshe is instructed to speak to the Jewish people to tell them that adam ki yakriv mikem, if a man, if a person among you of the Jewish people will want to bring a karban, a sacrifice to Hashem, and then the psukim launch into everyone's favorite topic of karbanos. And we get into the myriad of details of the various karbanos. If I recall correctly, I think there's 5 different karbanos that are described here in the Parsha in great detail. But the introduction to all the karbanos is that one phrase, Adam ki yakriv mikem, karban laHashem. So 2 questions, or achat shehem shtayim. One is, and this is the main question, why is the term Adam used? Why not use the more common or frequently used term Ish, or Geber, but I would say more likely Ish, right? I didn't do a search, but I would think that that would be more typical and more natural in a sentence like this. Certainly a little bit more a second person than third person almost. Well, it's still third person, but still, it just doesn't seem right. Adam ki yakriv mikem, if a person from among you, as opposed to a man, so you would speak more directly in the term Ish. But secondly, and I think also related, which is why does the Torah then conclude or add in that phrase, mikem? Wouldn't the pasuk have read just as smoothly, Adam ki yakriv karban laHashem? If a person, if a man, will bring a karban. Why stress that this person is bringing a karban, Adam ki yakriv mikem? A person from among you will bring a karban. It's a completely unnecessary and unhelpful addition, or so it would seem. So perhaps to answer this question, I can share with you an incredible story, which is, you find it in numerous sources. I don't know if that guarantees that it's actually historically accurate, but hopefully the multiple Alpi Shnaim or Shlosha stories, Yakum HaDover, hopefully if you find the same story in a few places, that makes it more likely to be accurate. And whether it happened or not, it is definitely true. And it includes, not only is it a powerful story, but it includes an incredible vort, an incredible idea, which I think might be relevant to our parsha. As many of you probably know, in 1913, we had what could have been one of the greatest blood libels in Jewish history, certainly would have been the greatest blood libel in the early 20th century, and that is the famous story of Menachem Mendel Baylis. In 1913, he was accused in Russia and put on trial in Kiev for the gruesome murder of a 13-year-old Russian boy. Now, of course, he didn't do it, but like many other blood libels, certainly going back to medieval period, the facts obviously didn't necessarily matter, and the trumped-up charges were quite serious, and obviously the stakes for Baylis were literally life and death, but the stakes for the entire Jewish people, certainly in the Russian world, in Russia, were very, very on edge. The anti-Semitism and the feverish anti-Jewish stereotypes that were being whipped up in the press leading up to the trial were put everyone really at risk, and in fact, the prosecutor didn't have much shame, and part of the trial itself included all sorts of stereotypical and anti-Semitic tropes. For those of you who like literature, you may be familiar with Bernard Malamud's famous work, The Fixer. The Fixer is a fictionalized account of the Baylis trial. In that trial, the prosecutor, one of the star witnesses, was an anti-Semitic priest. And the priest was called on to give extra testimony to confirm that a Jew could do such a thing because Jews really don't believe that other people, non-Jews, are really fully human. They believe that non-Jews are subhuman, and therefore this Baylis could have killed him. How did the priest prove to the court that Jews are so prejudiced that they don't think that other people, Gentiles, are human, don't deserve to live? So this priest quoted the Talmud. He quoted the Gemara. The Gemara says in Masechet Yevamos, Daf Samach Aleph Amar Aleph, Adam ki Yaakov rikem, to me, Adam, atem kriyim Adam, v'ein ha'ovdei kochavim kriyim Adam. Says the Gemara, if you want to translate it very simplistically and literally, that only Jews are considered human. Only Jews are considered Adam. But ovdei kochavim, but non-Jews, are not considered Adam. Aha, said the priest. You see, from here, the Jews, they try to keep these things secret in their holy books, but Jews don't think that non-Jews are really human. Ein ovdei kochavim kriyim Adam, they're not human, and therefore there's no reason for them not to kill us because they don't even think we're human. This is obviously quite dangerous and precarious. At this time, the famed Rav Meir Shapiro, who would go on to become the great Rav of Lublin, the founder of Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin, and the founder and initiator of the whole Daf Yomi phenomenon. He was then a young rabbi in a small community in the Russia called Galina. And he was aware of this, and he sent a letter to the chief rabbi, the then chief rabbi of Moscow, who was an expert witness for the defense. And he offered the following vort, the following defense, which was entered in and used in the trial successfully. And he explained the Gemara as follows. There are many synonyms in the Hebrew language that mean the word man. Adam, Ish, Gever, all these words really more or less mean the same thing, correct? So why does the Gemara Dafka specifically choose this term of Adam, that Atem, Yisrael, Kriyam, Adam, a goy is not an Adam, a Jew is an Adam. Why is Dafka this? Why not Ish? Why not Gever? So said of Meir Shapiro, a simple but profound insight. All of the other terms can be conjugated in the plural. An Ish can be Anashim. A Gever can become Gvarim. But Adam has no plural conjugation. The word Adam can only be used in the singular. Therefore, Rav Meir Shapiro explained, the Gemara, by using this word, was pointing out that only the Jewish people, from among all of the nations, are Adam. They are truly singular. They are truly one unit, one body, completely unified as if they are one. Only Israel is Kriyam Adam. All the Jews in the world, they live in Russia, the north, the west, the south, the east, doesn't matter where Jews are, Yisrael Kriyam Adam, they're all unified. All Jews are part of one unit, are part of one body. Other nations of the world are, of course, human. Chas v'shalom. Everyone is Nivra B'Tselem Elokim. It's a Mishnah in Perkei Avos. Chaviv Adam Shnivra B'Tselem. And in that context, we interpret it as referring to all human beings. But there's something about the word Adam that the Gemara here is highlighting, that only Jews have this unique characteristic that they are not Anashim or Gvarim, but we are Adam. Non-Jews are absolutely human dignity, human rights, Anashim, Gvarim, but this unique emphasis on unity, on the complete overriding unity of the Jewish people, that is something that is unique. And the truth of the matter is, that trial, the Bayless trial, it proved the very point of the Gemara. After all, if some other Russian, some random Russian, were accused of murder, would that have preoccupied, let alone threatened, Russian nationals the world over? Would Russians who had emigrated to other parts of Europe or North America, would they be tittering? Would they be worried? Would they be reading the news every day? Would they be off leading their version of Tehillim every day to make sure that this Russian, you know, national that they were that they knew maybe from their hometown, that he got off? We know this from so many other examples. The fact that whether it was in the Bayless trial or so many others, one Jew is in crisis, one Jew is falsely accused, the entire Jewish world mobilizes, raising tzedakah, Tehillim, Chesed, all sorts of things. It happened in the Bayless trial, it happened before, and it's happened so many times since. That itself gives the greatest proof to this idea of Yisrael Kriyam Adam. Imagine now if in Italy right now, or maybe that's not the best country to pick from, I apologize, I don't mean to be insensitive to Italy, what they're going through, but to take some other country that's not maybe being particularly ravaged at the moment, in Austria, I think they're doing relatively well, in part because of the Austrian Prime Minister said, because they took Netanyahu's warning seriously a few weeks ago before more than other European countries did, and they were the first country in Europe to close their borders, and he publicly thanked Netanyahu for that. So imagine that there's an Austrian who's undergoing a trial, and maybe he's being falsely accused. Would Austrians who live all sorts of around the world, and Austrian Americans and people who've emigrated from Austria around the world, would that be the first thing they'd be looking at in the news every day? Would a second or third generation American or Canadian who had moved his grandparents and great-grandparents emigrated from Austria 100 years ago, would he look at this as, oh my gosh, I need to say Tehillim for this person? The answer is of course not, and we know that, because there's something different about the Jewish people. And it doesn't matter if a Jew is suffering in Russia or in Morocco, in Israel or Canada or Australia, all Jews around the world care. And that's what Rav Meir Shapiro said. That was pshat in the Gemara, that Yisrael Kriyam Adam. And perhaps that's the pshat in our pasuk. That's why Adam is used here in the beginning of Vayikra. Adam ki yakrav mikem, we're called upon to bring a karbon, when we're called upon to sacrifice, to bring sacrifices, yakrav mikem, to sacrifice of ourselves. It's in those critical sacrificial moments, those challenging moments, when more than any other time, we realize the truth. That even though it's mikem, there are many Jews, of course, hopefully millions of Jews, kein yirbu, but we're all one. It's Adam ki yakriv mikem. All those mikem, all those millions of Jews, it's ultimately Adam. We're all one indivisible unit. And of course, it's not enough for this fact to just be true. What's more important is that we have to be aware of its truth, and that has to govern our reality and our sense of mutual responsibility and care for our fellow Jews. Many years ago, I read a beautiful quote that I think is applicable here, and with this we'll conclude, that sometimes it takes the weight of a massive tragedy to break the heart and let the beauty out. A lot of times our beauty is bottled up. In the normal course of events, we bottle up or hide all the beauty. And sometimes it takes the weight of a tragedy to crack open the heart and let open the beauty. Unfortunately, the tragedy and the challenges that we're all going through now, each of us in our own way, whichever country we're in, everyone is struggling, but there's so much beauty that is coming out as well, and the various chesed and other things that people are doing for each other, the care and concern, and of course the way we were able to connect with Torah in a way that we would not have even thought of just a week or two ago. And this is something that hopefully we can all take chizuk from. We should reconnect to this, we should reinvest in this, but it's also an investment that will pay immediate dividends. The more we focus on the Adam, our connection to all Jews, and following the news and caring about Jews throughout the world, then Emir Hashem, not only will we feel it, but that'll also not only help inspire us to help other Jews, but that itself, not only can we help each other, that'll help ourselves, because that will give us chizuk to go through this trying time. Hopefully it should end soon, but as long as it is, and as long as we're physically apart, we have to remember more than ever, Adam ki yakriv, that we are truly one, Yisrael kriyim Adam. Thank you again for joining. Everyone should have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos.